Okay, sure. I'm ready. Hello, everyone. It's good to see you all. As Dove mentioned, we're here to look at the seven steps to awakening. Really what we're looking at during this period of time is my personal journaling process through the seven steps of awakening. I know that there are some other people that are journaling through it also, and I think that's wonderful. For anyone who feels guided to do so, that's great. One friend called me, and we were talking on the phone a little over a week ago, and she was talking about her experience with the seven steps, and I was talking about mine. And one thing that we have both noticed since we've been working with the seven steps is that we have seen more ego in ourselves in the last couple of weeks than we have seen for a very, very long time. And my friend said she was wondering if she should quit the seven steps because of this, you know, because she had been feeling so much peace and acceptance and, you know, just all of the qualities that we associate with awakening. And now suddenly she's seen ego again. And I told her that she couldn't see ego again if it wasn't still there. And she's like, oh, you're right. And she understood immediately and is continuing with the seven steps. I'm going to let Jamie out as usual. As soon as I sit down in this chair and start talking, she likes to go outside. So let me let her out, and then I'll come back and talk a little bit more about how I'm perceiving my experience with the seven steps. When the teachings of Inner Ramana came, at that point, you know, the teachings of Inner Ramana came because there was ego was ranting in my mind again after a period of some relative peace, a short period actually. But after even a short period of relative peace, when ego started ranting again, I asked for help, and that's when the teachings of Inner Ramana came. And if you've read the book, then you know that even while the book was being delivered to me, there was still a lot of resistance. It was very difficult for me. But after getting into the groove of practicing the teachings of Inner Ramana, I did begin to experience, the best way to describe it is just what it felt like. It felt like an ongoing awakening, or I often described it as a disappearing. When I would listen to teachers that we think of as enlightened teachers, you know, like Byron Katie, Jan Fraser is someone that we were looking at, Muji, when Muji would speak, and they would speak of their experience. To be honest, I really felt that I had the same experience. I did not feel that they were speaking about an experience that I did not know in my everyday life. And yet at the same time, there was this feeling, for lack of better words, you know, just this feeling that I kind of hate using words sometimes because I think words can be so easily misunderstood, but obviously that's all I have, so I'm going to go ahead and go with it. There was this feeling of not done yet. There was also this feeling that had I wanted to, I could have taken that experience that I was having and slip into what is known as a false enlightenment. And the false enlightenment is not incredibly uncommon. And in fact, Inner Ramana speaks a little bit of it in his book. There's certainly some speaking about it in NTI Revelation. And anyone who knows me knows well that this is an experience that I don't desire. I don't desire a false enlightenment. I think I told this story before, but on Thanksgiving of this year, I was reading the Human Gospel of Ramana Maharshi, and I was reading about one of the cooks in the kitchen at the Ramana Ashram. And Ramana walked in and asked her if something was done cooking yet, and she said something like, no, it had not yet boiled all of the way down. And he told her, that's good. He said, most people do not wait for it to boil all of the way down. He was happy that she was waiting for that. Although that appeared to be about food, I knew that it wasn't. And I made a commitment in that moment. I felt like that was very personal guidance. I made a commitment in that moment to let it boil all the way down, to not go into some false enlightenment. And of course, shortly after that, in fact, a week after Thanksgiving, I left for India with Jay, who's here in the room, and it was a magnificent experience. There's just nothing to say about it other than it was an experience of, I would call it both an experience of recognizing progress that had been made, because you could say again, many things went wrong and nothing upset me. It was also a wonderful experience of an increasing love of silence and devotion, both. And on the plane back, again, I felt that guidance to lead a year of silence. And I also felt this guidance, I'd already started actually just before going to India, felt this guidance to do the Seven Steps book. And since I've been back, my first 22-ish, 23-ish days of January have really been spent spending, you know, time with the Seven Steps, spending increasing time in silence, and also literally rearranging my life. Guidance keeps coming up to change this, get rid of this, add this, move this. So January seems to be a time of rearranging. But one of the experiences that I've had in January is the same as my friend. I have seen more ego in the mind in the month of January than I have in the months that preceded it. There is an experience, however, of it being different than before. Before, when ego was in the mind, it was believed. You know, I experienced it. I experienced it. So if I was... You know, if there were thoughts of anger, I felt anger. If there were thoughts of hatred, I felt hatred. If there were thoughts of fear, I felt fear. You know, I experienced it. This time, there isn't an actual experience of it. There's just seeing it. I talked a little bit about this last night. There's seeing it. But not the experience of it, not the believing it part. But my feeling is that the best image I have, if you imagine the mind as a great big vessel of liquid. When this process originally started, that liquid was very thick with mud. There might have been a little bit of clear water floating at the top, and that was recognized as willingness to awaken, that little bit of clear water. But for the most part, the entire vessel was thick with mud. And what's happened in this process of being on what we call the spiritual path is that, you know, the guidance of the Holy Spirit, the mind watching, the practicing of allowing the emotions without believing the story, just the inner Ramana, the NTI, the Course in Miracles, all of it has been straining the mud out of the water so that the water is becoming increasingly clear. And in the last year and a half or so, what has happened is that a lot of clear water has been experienced. But at the same time, there was some sediment that had settled down at the bottom. It wasn't really a part of the daily experience. The daily experience was of more of the clear water. But what the Seven Steps is doing, the Seven Steps is taking that recognition that I want to let this boil all the way down, that I want no ego, that I want no false enlightenment, right? However, whatever words you want to put that in. And the seven steps is now taking that water and spinning it like with a spoon. So that the sediment that had settled at the bottom, the little bit at the bottom, is rising up into the clear water so that it can be seen and it too can be filtered out. So if anyone else is using the seven steps and you're having an experience of seeing more ego than you maybe have seen in some time, just remember that is, you know, good. Remember, Jesus tells us we do not know our advances from our retreats, and you could not see ego if there was not ego there. The seven steps can't make ego, right? So it's good that this pot is being stirred and that those sediments are rising up to be seen. I don't think everyone will have that experience with the seven steps. I suspect there's another experience that people will begin to have. People who have spent a lot of time listening to teachings or reading external teachings and not spending a lot of time learning directly from within themselves. I think your experience with the seven steps may be that you will become very, very in touch with your inner self like you never have before. And that may be a different experience than the one I'm describing. So let's also not expect that we should all have the same experience from this book. But if you're feeling guided, you know, to the book, well then trust that. And if you're not feeling guided to the book, trust that too. All right, so why don't we have a moment of silence? And then we'll start looking at the seven steps to awakening along with my personal journal. Amen. All right. The giggle is just because I really do love the silence a lot. So that's where the giggle comes in from. What I'm going to do now is give you a link starting with number 16 in my journal. For those of you who are new to this, I will be going back and forth between my personal journal and the book itself. I'll try to be real clear about where I am at all times, so hopefully no one gets confused. If you happen to be doing the seven steps and you want to share from your journal, please do. If you're feeling that guidance, then that's what I want. But we are going to remain focused on the seven steps. No side discussions. We're not getting off into metaphysical discussions. We're just reading the quotes and then sharing the clarity that came to each of us regarding the quotes. All right, so we're going to remain focused. I'm in the book on page 19, and today I'm starting at quote 16. We're still in step one of the seven steps, and we are still in Ramana Maharshi's quotes. And here is quote number 16 from the book. Some there are who endlessly jump and sweating, shout full-throated, refuting or elaborating doctrines, instead of biding in clear silence, inquiring into that which is and in the heart enjoying it. Again, the quote. Some there are who endlessly jump and sweating, shout full-throated, refuting or elaborating doctrines, instead of biding in clear silence, inquiring into that which is, and in the heart, enjoying it. All right, so now I'm going to the journal, which is the link I've given you. And this is how I wrote this. Passion for knowing spiritual truths with the intellect is a fool's game. Quiet passion for knowing silent self is humble wisdom. I must turn inward, introverted, clothed with the silence of self, and abide there humbly, peacefully, unnoticed. This just reminds me of, in the Bible, Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, when he talked about the fools that, he didn't use the word fools, but he's used a similar word, I think. He talked about the fools who pray and fast so that they are noticed, right? And he said instead to go into the closet or whatever he said, go into the dark, into the private, and pray to your Father there, right? I mentioned yesterday that one of the things I'm seeing with the ego sediment that is being brushed up is this thought that somehow, it's actually to me not even a rational thought, but then who said ego is rational? But it's this thought that somehow as I am backing out of more and more activities, which is what I've been doing, and I'm backing into more and more time in absolute aloneness, spending less time in a lot of activities with other people, that somehow through that process I'm going to cease to exist. This is the ego thought, that the somehow it's like being noticed is important to existence. That's how I'll word it. That being noticed is important to existence. And if I cease to be noticed, I also cease to exist. And one of the reasons we get involved in intellectual, spiritual discussions, although we may not be conscious of it, is, you know, we want to be noticed. So, you know, we get out there with others, we talk about it. And that retreating from such activity for the ego is very scary. Because if everyone ceases to notice me, then I will no longer exist. That is the thought. Of course, that thought is being ignored. but this journal entry kind of captures that. Notice again, passion for knowing spiritual truths with the intellect is a fool's game. Quiet passion for knowing silent self is humble wisdom. I must turn inward, introverted, clothed with the silence of self, and abide there humbly, peacefully, unnoticed. All right, so if you just scroll to the bottom of this particular screen, underneath where comments can be left if desired, and then look on the left side, you'll see where it has a little number 17. You can click on that number 17, and you will go to the next journal entry. For those of you who may not yet be in the journal, I am posting that link to number 17. And then I'm turning my attention back to the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, and reading the next Ramana quote. None can perceive the sun, the self, by arguments. Vexatious, mental disputes are but conceits that cloud the light of truth and make the eyes in dizziness swim. I may have mentioned this before, although these quotes are being attributed to Ramana Maharshi, they are not directly Ramana Maharshi quotes. These are from The Garland of Gurus Saying, which is a very long poem written by Muru Ganar. So if you notice that these don't sound like just talking, they sound a bit poetic, this is why. They're actually Muru Ganar's writings of Ramana Maharshi's sayings. And again, number 17. None can perceive the sun, the self, by arguments. Vexatious mental disputes are but conceits that cloud the light of truth and make the eyes in dizziness swim. I'll let Jamie in and then we'll go back to the journal. Just like last week, she is filthy, but we will just let it be. and I'll deal with it later. Everything in here can be vacuumed. All right, so if we go to the journal, to number 17, this is what I wrote. Debating truth only hides truth by asserting, I know. I may think I know, and I may think others are wrong. But I allow ego to fade when I retreat from the opportunity to debate or correct, both outwardly and inwardly in thought. Let others have their ideas as I retreat from mine. This is not only true of spiritual debate, but of any sense of debate. Let others interpret the world, its scenes, actions, words, others, and me as they choose. Do not defend or correct. Let all interpretations lay untouched, meaningless and dying, returning to the stillness from which they came. This is best for awakening, even better than correcting another. And of course, most of us in this room, at least at some point, were Course in Miracles students. So we're all aware of Jesus' teaching that we not correct a brother. We're also aware of Jesus' teaching that our brother is always right, and from his perspective in that moment, he is. He's always right. He's always sharing his current perspective perfectly. But even though we're aware of these teachings, I'm certain that we have all also at some point thought that we knew better than someone else, that we were more right than them, or maybe we even thought we were completely right and they were completely wrong. Maybe that's true of interpretations of the Course or other spiritual teachings. That could be true of an interpretation of an event, an interpretation of another person, an interpretation of, you know, me. Myself, each of us, whoever that myself is. You know, people may think that we have certain intentions for actions we've taken or decisions we've made, and we know those were not our intentions. And I feel I know me better than anyone, and so I want to correct this person. I want to help them see what my true intentions were because they're misunderstanding, right? But what this particular thought is saying is that all of this is truly not helpful. It is not helpful to letting go of ego myself. Because all of this asserts the idea, I know. I know. And asserting the idea, I know, is actually reinforcing the I in the I know. And that I is the ego itself, or the false self, the imposter self, as Michael Langford likes to call it. So if we are serious about letting go of ego, if we're really serious now, then what that means is we want to allow people to have whatever ideas they're going to have, even if it appears to be completely wrong ideas about me, my intentions. Right? Let them have their ideas. And retreat from any desire to defend, to correct, to debate. Not only outwardly in action, but also in my own head. It doesn't do any good if I disagree with Teddy and I choose not to tell him, you know, to his face, but the whole time showering and thinking about how wrong Teddy is. You know, it doesn't do any good. So this is a complete retreating from that desire to correct, that desire to be right. And this is what's most helpful to letting go of ego. So if that's our purpose, that's why we do this. So again, debating truth only hides truth by asserting, I know. I may think I know, and I may think others are wrong. But I allow ego to fade when I retreat from the opportunity to debate or correct, both outwardly and inwardly in thought. Let others have their ideas as I retreat from mine. This is not only true of spiritual debate, but of any sense of debate. Let others interpret the world, its scenes, actions, words, others, and me as they choose. Do not defend or correct. Let all interpretations lay untouched, meaningless and dying, returning to the stillness from which they came. This is best for awakening, even better than correcting another. So again, if you are in the journal, you can scroll down, and on the left you will find the little number 18, and click on that to go to the next journal entry. For anyone who is not in the journal, I will paste that link into the room now. If anybody's listening to the recording, by the way, and you want to get to the journal, it is www.rda7stepsjournal.wordpress.com. All right, so now I'm returning to the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, reading quote number 18. Far from revealing truth, words only darken and conceal it. To let the truth shine of itself instead of burying it in words, merge in the heart both word and thought. All right, again. Far from revealing truth, words only darken and conceal it. To let the truth shine of itself instead of burying it in words, merge in the heart both word and thought. All right, so this is number 18 in the journal. Silence is an inward action, non-action. To be quiet outwardly, but to continue the dialogue and commenting inwardly, is still to conceal truth in the noise of debate and I know. I know is very dangerous to truth because it buries it completely in meaningless chatter. Let all thoughts die upon noticing them. Stay immersed in inner silence. Let the heart be home to the mind. I mentioned to you all that my life in January is being rearranged. I found that there are outward tools that help me to be silent. Some of these tools I never would have suspected that Regina would use. One thing that I've discovered, I did not know this before, by the way, this is kind of new to me, but maybe I knew it to a point, but not to the point that I know it now. I've discovered that there's something about my hands. My hands are very, I'm going to call them alive. And if my hands are busy, for some reason it's easier for my mind to be still. I don't know why. Let's see, I want to see what Monica just wrote. She says, Eckhart calls that the inner body. I don't know why. I do remember that when I was a corporate trainer, we talked about the different types of learners, one of which was kinesthetic. And we used to, in the training room, we would have literally toys on the table so that people who were kinesthetic learners could, even while listening to the lecture, play with the toy. Because if they were sitting there playing with the toy with their hands, their mind was actually paying more attention to the lecture. And some of you may know that I sit here, I have a little Bible, a tiny Bible, like 1 inch by 1 inch, that I sit here and play with. You can hear the pages of it. When I'm listening to someone else, like if I was listening to Muji or something, I'd sit here and play with it. When I'm listening to Lynn on Fridays when we teach together, I sit here and play with it. So I guess I kind of always knew that about listening, that I listen better if my hands are busy. What I've learned this month is that I am still better if there's something in my hands. And so one new thing that I've acquired is a rosary. I've never been Catholic, by the way. But I have a very nice rosary. In fact, to be honest, it was an expensive rosary. It's called a 5-decade rosary. It's supposed to last a long time. It has a large 13-millimeter jujube wooden beads on it. And when I hold that rosary, it so occupies my hands that it's easier for my mind to be still or for my mind to drop into my heart. I've also found that, with my eyes closed, I can be still for a time. But if my eyes stay closed, actually somehow I slip back into mind wandering. I found that if I go back and forth between eyes closed and eyes open, my mind actually stays still longer. And I've also found that there are certain things that if my eyes look at them, it helps me to stay in stillness. And I would say objects of devotion, such as a Ramana statue, right? Or I have another little statue of the lion and the lamb laying down together, a picture of Ramana. I have a cowboy hanging on the wall in my house that's kneeling in front of a cross. That's new, but watching him in prayer. Also nature, looking at a tree, looking at a bird, right? So what I'm doing right now is I'm allowing myself to be guided to discover these outer tools that assist me in dropping the mind into the heart and then staying there. And there's this feeling, of course, that the tools are temporary and that the habit of being able to be still in the heart will naturally grow stronger, right? But that right now it's really good to have these tools. So I've been acquiring these tools, and I do spend time in silent devotion, just allowing the mind to be still and the heart to be open. And as I practice this, my thought is that I will get better and better, so that more and more as I start to see a new thought stream start, I could just drop into that open heart, that practiced open heart. And then I can let the thoughts die upon noticing them by remaining in that open heart. All right, so again, number 18, silence is an inward action, non-action. It's both. So there's no duality there. to be quiet outwardly, but to continue the dialogue and commenting inwardly is still to conceal truth in the noise of debate and I know. So again, if I'm sitting still but thinking, I'm still in the noise and debate of I know. I know is very dangerous to truth because it buries it completely in meaningless chatter. Let all thoughts die upon noticing them. Stay immersed in inner silence. Let the heart be home to the mind. All right, you can scroll down to the bottom to where you see the little number 19 on the left and click on that to go to the next journal entry. And if, as usual, I will post the link in the room. And now I am going to the Seven Steps to Awakening, quote number 19, Ramana Maharshi, via Muruganar. Number 19. Let not your intellect become a slave to the mere sound and fury of controversy. Enter the heart with mind pellucid, concept free, and realize your natural being as truth. All right, I'm going to go ahead and go directly to the journal now. Number 19 in the journal, resist the tempting pull of controversy, opinion, right or wrong, and I know. Stay in the heart, in open and still unknowing. Stay in the peace of no opinion, of pure being. Excuse me, my voice is dying. Let me get a drink. And I don't really feel like this needs any comment, so I will just read it again. Resist the tempting pull of controversy, opinion, right or wrong, and I know. Stay in the heart, in the open and still unknowing. Stay in the peace of no opinion, of pure being. Actually, as I read it the second time, a comment did come. Most of the comments just have to do with what I'm noticing in my own experience. But some of you may have heard me say yesterday that I realized that I need to let go of my chatty giggling conversation that I have, you know, with Jasmine and Danielle, whom I live with. We have a lot of fun. But what became very apparent to me on Saturday night, I was already feeling this intuitively anyway, I just hadn't acted on it, but it became strikingly obvious at a point on Saturday night. And that is that when I get into this giggle, playing conversation with them, I'm not as focused on my practice of these habits. And it happened when we were talking about Jasmine and Danielle and I had gone hiking on Saturday, and we did some hiking on some ice, and it was slippery. And there was a conversation, just a fun, chatty conversation, about who was the most careful. And I listened to, you know, Jasmine's opinion, and then I said, well, I think I was the most careful because, and kind of out of the blue, because we were happy, but kind of out of the blue, she shot me this really hateful look and said, oh, you want to argue? And then she went right back to laughing. It was like instantaneous. But something about that quick change in her face and something about it, it communicated to me, oh, she's right. She's right. I mean, I may be thinking I'm just sitting here having fun with the people I live with, but I was saying, no, here's what I think. And I did, underneath that, there was this thought that I was right. I did kind of want her to know that I think I was the most careful today hiking. You know, it seems meaningless, but I came to realize that through not paying attention through just sitting there chatting with the two people I live with, I was still missing ways that I hold on to the ego, ways that I assert I know or assert opinion or assert, you know, right. And so it became clear to me that at least for a time, it's most helpful to me if I am physically quiet, even with the people I live with. Not completely quiet. There's no way I can be completely quiet with Danielle and Jasmine, but even more. I need to pull back more into watching. Because when I'm not watching, I am reinforcing ego and not noticing. So again, resist the tempting pull of controversy, opinion, right or wrong, and I know. Stay in the heart, in open and still unknowing. Stay in the peace of no opinion, of pure being. And as I mentioned, just like it's easier for me to be still if there's something in my hands and my eyes are going back and forth between open and close, it is easier for me to stay in the heart if my mouth is not moving. So, little things I'm noticing. All right, so you can scroll down to number 20 and click on that. And here's the link. And I will go to number 20 in the book, which is on page 20, top of page 20. From questing inward in the heart comes knowledge, which destroys all false illusions. From questing inward in the heart comes knowledge, which destroys all false illusions. All right, number 20 in the journal. If the mind wants something to do, and we know it does. If the mind wants something to do, let it point itself inward toward the self. By staying inward pointing as the only interest, illusions fade. So the mind does want something to do. So this is what we let the mind do. There's a number of ways to do this. Self-inquiry is a way that's strongly recommended by Ramana Maharshi. Mantras, also recommended by Ramana Maharshi in his lifetime and through the teaching of the Inner Ramana. Surrender, recommended by numerous teachers. Breathing is sometimes recommended. As I said, I find that having things in my hands and reducing the amount of mouth movement helps me to keep the mind focused inward. I don't do the mantras so much anymore. Occasionally it runs through my mind, but more my heart is very open. And what I mean by that is I can feel a tingling, warm tingling sensation in the heart. It goes underneath both armpits, goes up into the throat. It's often in the crown of the head as well. And so I just focus my attention on that openness, on that. But again, if the mind wants something to do, and it does, then let it point itself inward. Do that with the mind, toward the self. By staying inward pointing as the only interest, illusions fade. All right, we can scroll down to number 21. I don't think anybody else is really entering the room, so I'm going to quit posting the links for now. I think you guys are all in the journal. Hopefully you're finding yourself to number 21 easily. If you need the link, let me know, and I will happily post it. In the book, number 21 says, can hunger be appeased by eating food cooked over a painted flame? The end of pain, the bliss of peace, results from egoless awareness and not at all from verbal wisdom. So here, verbal wisdom is being likened to a painted flame that you cannot cook your food over. Again, number 21. Can hunger be appeased by eating food cooked over a painted flame? The end of pain, the bliss of peace, results from egoless awareness and not at all from verbal wisdom. All right, number 21 in the journal. Knowing everything the books and teachers teach about enlightenment does not end suffering or lead to the experience of pure happiness. One must let go of ego in order to know the experience of pure happiness, which is brought on by truth awareness. I can continually let go of ego each and every time I notice it, without exception. There was a time I would not have made that last statement. I can continually let go of ego each and every time I notice it without exception, because I was too attached to ego. And at that point, even trying to let go of ego every time I noticed it would have been suffering, because the resistance was so strong. You know, like if I really want to hike to the top of the mountain, and Jasmine is afraid of the ice and doesn't want to, and she wants to turn around, it would have been hard for me at one time to just say, okay, I let go of that desire, you know, let's go. I still would have suffered. It would have been a lie. I don't know how else to say that. It would have been a lie. But now, through willingness and true desire, the desire to let go of ego is stronger than any other desire. So when I notice ego in my own mind, all I have to do is recognize it as ego, and then I can let go of it. I can immediately let go of the thought, oh, I wanted to get to the top. Right? I can just change my mind. I just have to notice first, oh, that's ego that wants to get to the top of the mountain. Dove says it takes great maturity to do that. And I do think some maturity has occurred here. So the statement at the end is a statement I can make now. Maybe I couldn't have at another time. Jesus does say in the Course that something to the vein that if resistance is too much, you know, do not push yourself. You know, he doesn't want you to suffer because you're not yet ready. But I say, I can continually let go of ego each and every time I notice it, without exception. And I am ready to do that. And so with the seven steps stirring that pot and the little ego sediments floating to the top, what a great opportunity it is to let go of ego, of every little sediment. All right, we can scroll down to number 22. And click on that, and I will go to number 22 in the book. Never through argument, but only by abiding in the heart as pure awareness, which lights up and shines within the mind, can one enjoy the thrill, the throb, the bliss supreme of being the self. It's kind of fun how he's written that, huh? Never through argument, but only by abiding in the heart as pure awareness, which lights up and shines within the mind, can one enjoy the thrill, the throb, the bliss supreme of being the self. All right, number 22 in the journal. It looks short and sweet. Surrender all tendency and desire to argue. fall back into the joy and bliss of heart being. So it seems like what this journal entry is pointing to is that there is a imitation satisfaction in being right. And I'm sure we all know that imitation satisfaction. You know, if there's a debate going on, and in the end somehow I'm proven to be right, there's a little thrill there. A little thrill. But we're not going for the little thrill, right? We're going for the total immersion of the joy and bliss of heart being, which makes the little thrill of appearing right appear pale. Plus the little thrill of appearing right, it's not consistent. Sometimes we're right, sometimes we're wrong. And the other side of that little thrill is suffering. If you fall back into the joy and bliss of just heart being and forget about right and wrong, it has no opposite. So we want to let go of the little thrill of being right and go for this, you know, how did Muru Ganar say it? This thrill, throb, bliss supreme even, of being the self. So number 22 in the journal, surrender all tendency and desire to argue. Fall back into the joy and bliss of heart being. And you can just maybe see the image there of falling back in absolute surrender into this big pool of heart being and being immersed there, right? All right, you can scroll down to the bottom and click on number 23, and we have had someone new enter the room, so I will post the link to number 23 in the journal. But before reading from number 23 in the journal, of course, I will read number 23 in the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening. So this is another Ramana Maharshi saying written as poetry by Muru Ganar. Number 23. Knowing aright the nature of the self and abandoning the non-self as void, unreal, is wisdom true. All other knowledge is ignorance and not wisdom. All right, I'll read that one more time. Knowing aright the nature of the self and abandoning the non-self as void, unreal, is wisdom true. All other knowledge is ignorance and not wisdom. All right, number 23 in the journal. Having experienced at least some sense of self, settle for nothing less as real. The limited individual sense of personal I is nothing. Give it no value. When it seems to be me, step back into impersonal awareness with peaceful gratitude. Become comfortable with no I. Many of us, if not all of us, have had some sense of our true self. You know, maybe it came during meditation. For me, it came the fullest while listening to the teachings of Inner Ramana, at least for the first time. So we've talked about that when I was sharing the message, the grace of the guru. Now it comes just in that stillness, in that silence that the Inner Ramana pointed to. But if we have had any sense of the self at all, then we know that when we are in that sense, the sense of the self, we know that's who we are. I mean, we know this is me fully, right? This is my truth. When we come back out into this personal I and we start seeing, you know, ourself as Regina or whoever, and we're acting like Regina, you know, trying to be right about who was the safest one on the ice. It doesn't have that same knowing feel to it. I don't know how to describe it. It's a deeper knowing when we have the sense of self, the true sense of self. It's a deeper knowing. So we don't want to forget that contrast. You know, A Course in Miracles tells us that the Holy Spirit uses contrast to teach. He teaches with contrast, right? So we don't want to forget the difference about that knowing that we feel when we're in the stillness, for example. That knowing of this is who I am. And then that sense of this is who I am when we're being the personality. There's a difference in the sense, right? One is actually more sure, more real. So we want to use that contrast of those two senses. This is who I am. Those two different senses. To become very aware of which one is truer, therefore which one has more value. And when the idea pops up, this is who I am, and I'm the personality, I want to not be satisfied with that sense. And not be willing to stay with that sense. But always be wanting to drop into the truer sense of this is who I am. So having experienced at least some sense of self, settle for nothing less as real. The limited individual sense of personal I is nothing. Give it no value. When it seems to be me, step back into impersonal awareness, or we could say go back into the heart, right? With peaceful gratitude. Become comfortable with no I, so no personal sense of self. What you can do now is scroll down and click on number 24. And once again, I think we have at least one new person in the room, so I will post the link to number 24. But before reading number 24 from the journal, I will go to the book, The Seven Steps to Awakening, and we are reading Ramana Maharshi via Muruganar. Even like a dream, this waking world is but a mind-conceived appearance in mind space. Hence, greatness lies in firmly ending indicative knowledge and the folly of fondness for outer objects. So we're still talking about the same general idea that to know, to be an I know about anything in the world is foolishness, and that instead our only focus should be the going within and the knowing of the self. So Muruganar, Ramana Maharshi again. Even like a dream, this waking world is but a mind-conceived appearance in mind space. Hence, greatness lies in firmly ending indicative knowledge and the folly of fondness for outer objects. All right, the journal, number 24. Firmly end thinking storytelling and attachment to outside circumstances. Attachment to mind ideas and mind images is attachment to mind, which is false self. Notice when attachment has strayed to either phenomena and bring it straight away back to self-inquiry, self-watching, self-being self. So again, what I notice that my mind does is that my mind wanders. Maybe you're familiar with that little habit. You know, some story will rise up and capture interest, and for at least a time until I notice I'm listening to the story in my mind. And of course, the same thing can happen on the outside. Like a silly little thought occurred this morning. I happened to look up at a blank spot on my wall that has not yet been filled since we moved in, and suddenly it occurred to me that a beaded Indian wall hanging would look really nice there. Like, that thought never occurred to me. And immediately I noticed my mind wanted to go start searching on the internet for a beaded wall hanging with some turquoise in it, maybe some red and some white, that was affordable, a certain length. Now, this was a period of time when the guidance was actually to go sit in stillness. But the mind was like, well, sure, I'll do that as soon as I search the internet for this beaded Indian wall hanging. Now, I caught on to that, and I saw that, and I did not go searching for the beaded Indian wall hanging. I just put it out of my mind and went on with the stillness. I laughed at that. But even as much as a week or two ago, I was not as tuned into that. I would have thought, oh, wait, I can do that. I can go search for the beaded wall hanging and then go in stillness. I mean, basically, that's what's been happening, is that all last year I was putting off the stillness by these other things that could be done. This year I'm saying, no, the stillness comes first. There's lots of little ways the mind gets us to be attached to our thinking or attached to the world, and therefore not paying attention to our self and our practices of self, whether that be self-inquiry, self-watching, or self-being self, just being in the heart, right? So we want to become aware of when the mind is pulling us out, getting us to think about something, getting us to go do something, something that is distracting us from, I'm going to call it, the purpose of this year. So firmly end thinking, storytelling, and attachment to outside circumstances. Attachment to mind ideas and mind images is attachment to mind, which is false self. Notice when attachment has strayed to either phenomena and bring it straight away, back to self-inquiry, self-watching, self-being self. And the painting of the lilies is hanging in my house in another spot that previously needed a painting. So that's already there. I got that for Christmas stuff. Okay, and I'm letting go of the mic. Bye-bye, everyone.